buckle up, you beauties, because we're about to dive deep into the world of all things hockey.
Pigeon! Woo! Woo!
Woo! A greasy pigeon isn't just any old bird. It's a message. It's letting the other guy know exactly where they stand. And it is not meant to be friendly.
You guys are sensitive over there.
And now, from the Pigeon's Nest, your hosts, Jeff Sullivan and Kevin Trussler.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Greasy Pigeon Podcast. Welcome to the Nest. As always, I am Jeff Sullivan, your host, and with me is Kevin Trussler. Kevin, what's good today, my friend?
On this feel-good Monday, hey, we still have hockey to talk about, right? That's the beauty. Last time we spoke, we were on the verge of possibly going into an early summer. So it's good to know that we still have at least one more game, and we can discuss the two that happened up in the Great White North.
Absolutely. And what a scene it was in Edmonton for those two games. The fans brought the energy, and we talked about being East Coast hockey fans on a previous episode. You don't get to see what the West Coast really offers a lot unless you stay up for those late games. So getting a being able to watch, I mean, from the start, the anthem, you know, the fact that the crowd gets into it, sings O Canada the way they do, that much energy, like, it's not saying anything new that Canada loves hockey, but when you see it in a place like Edmonton, you really understand how much the sport and that team and winning a cup means to that whole area.
Absolutely. I mean, even for the American anthem, they're engaged and singing along, and, you know, it's definitely an electric environment that hopefully one day I'll have a chance to go on up and see it in person.
Absolutely. Can you compare, do you have your experiences in Toronto versus what was in Edmonton?
Toronto's an interesting one. If you're up in the nosebleeds in Toronto, that's where the energy and the passion is. If you're down in the lower bowl, that's where the suits and, you know, it can sometimes be as quiet as a morgue there. But, you know, it's passion no matter what. I'd like to say the Leaf fans would be as electric, but you got to get there first in order to experience that, you know. Maybe it's more electric in preseason because the hope of the cup for the Leafs is there. But that's a story for another day.
That is a story for another day. And as you said, the electric atmosphere of Edmonton led to two decent games, even though game three was kind of a blowout early that got close late. And then game four was a blowout basically start to finish, kind of. And I think that as we'll talk, you agree that the number of that game, the final score, shows a game that got away from Florida late, you know, especially third period, but definitely late in the second. But there was opportunity for Florida to tighten that game up multiple times and couldn't get through Stuart Skinner. And that's the first time we've said that all series. Edmonton, down 3-1. We talked about how they could have maybe won game one, and that would have put them at the series at 2-2. And I think that is, you know, watching the last couple of games, that really is the better representation. This was not a sweep. I'm glad it wasn't a sweep. Edmonton doesn't deserve to lose without winning a game in the Stanley Cup Finals. But before we get to, you know, really dive into the game four blowout and all the pieces that went into that, what did you see in game three, right? It was kind of a tale of two games for Edmonton. How did you kind of read that, the way that game went?
Well, first and foremost, you know, we had the uncertainty of Barkov, right? He took that hit late in game two. There was questions as to whether or not he was going to address and if there was going to be any disciplinary action. And, you know, Barkov had a game in game three, right? He gets the apple on the first goal, and then he eventually gets the game-winning goal, which would be the fourth goal. So, you know, interesting tale. Game three, tied 1-1, and then the blunder, right? You have Skinner steps out of the crease, tries to stop the puck behind the net, does not stop it. It's a number of errors. You know, the defenseman not picking up Tarasenko in the slot. You know, obviously Skinner mishandling the puck behind the net. That seemed just to take the air out of the building because it was a good game up until that moment, and it turned on a dime. I think in a matter of what, 3-4 minutes, it ends up being 4-1. And, you know, you take the crowd right out of it. Kudos to the coach of Edmonton for, you know, hitting the reset button on the in the intermission between second and third, because they came out with a lot more energy in the third and obviously made it a game. You know, they make it a one goal game and there's a ton of game left, over five minutes left. And then you just see the Florida Panthers go to work, right? They just kill clock. They make it tough. They take away the high scoring chances or the high percentage areas. So a tale of two different games within the game. You know, Florida came out, played a perfect road game to start. And Edmonton, I thought, started to get their legs and away they went.
Yeah, absolutely, Kev. And I think with the way that game ended, you know, Edmonton scoring two in the third period. Yeah, Florida clamped him down. They got away with the W there. You know, Bobrovsky made some big saves in the third period. I know, you know, some people say momentum isn't a thing. Some people say it is a thing. So, you know, some of the pundits talk about momentum, how it doesn't work because it, you know, it happens so much within a game that there's no way it carries over from one game to another, right? But clearly something had to give Edmonton a boost because they came out all systems go in game four. Was that just because they're down 3-0, desperation and leave it all out there? Or do you think they found something at the end of game three?
Well, I think at the end of the day, you know, you end up finally cracking some of Bob's armor, you know, with going scoreless in game one, scoring only one in game two. The fact that they were able to put three past him and ultimately almost tied up, he makes the save of the series at that moment to keep the game in Florida's favor. But I think, you know, as a coach, I would build off of that. That's huge momentum going into game four. It is do or die at that moment. And, you know, again, you won third period. You start to build off of that. And, you know, I think that definitely led into game four. As you know, it's very tough to sweep a professional team, you know, that there's pride on the line. We saw it in the NBA finals. You know, Dallas came back with a huge win on their home court against the Celtics. And, you know, that's what I was expecting with Edmonton in game four, and they didn't disappoint.
Yeah. And we talked during game three and it shows why we're not NHL coaches, because both of us, I wanted to pull Skinner immediately after the fourth goal. You had said, you know, definitely at the break is when he needs to go.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not necessarily saying that Stu Skinner was the problem, but again, at that point, you're going to be down 3-0 if you don't turn it around. It's almost like do something just for the sake of doing something, right? Like energize the team. You know, sometimes a goalie change has a great impact on a team and they rally around it because they know it's not his fault either. McDavid said so at the end of game three, his press conference. None of our goals are on our goalie. Right. They understand that it was the team that let their goalie down, and they didn't. And he played well in the third period. I mean, he played, we'll get into some numbers later, but he was above 900 in that third period, kind of keeping Edmonton in it as they were chipping away at that lead. Right. Made it 4-3 with 5+ to go. That's a game. I mean, now we're in a ball game, ladies and gentlemen, let's see what we can do. And then Bobrovsky showed up and showed us why he's Bobrovsky. Right. So I think at the end of that game, 4-3, okay, Edmonton has a little life. At the end of the second period, your text to me was, it's over. And I fully believed you, right? Like, it just shows you how much within a game things can swap, and all of a sudden you get a little bit of hope, and hope is a really scary thing in the NHL playoffs.
Yeah, the momentum can swing so quickly. You know, you look at it's a 1-1 game in that third game. Edmonton, the ice seems to be tilted in Edmonton's favor. You know, it's a couple misplays, one Skinner, as I mentioned, and then the D just not getting back in time, letting Tarasenko get, you know, free rein to the slot. And away we go. You know, you hit the reset button in the intermission, you start playing a new game from there. Hopefully you can come back and at least force overtime, if at the very least you want to win the period, so it sets you up for game four, that you prove you can win a period that late in the game against Florida, which is shown to be extremely tough. They tend to lock it down once they've got a lead. And I think they're, I think their record is something ridiculous with taking a lead into the third period. I don't know if anyone's beat them, at least in the playoffs, but even into the regular season, I think there was a stat there that that showed that they lock it down come the third.
I believe they're now 68-0-3 in their last 71 when taking a lead into the third period. And on top of that, they're plus double digits in third period scoring compared to Edmonton, which coming out of game three was still 11 or something like that. It's crazy numbers, third period differential. Edmonton, though, blows Florida out of the water and plus in the first period, which hasn't shown up in this series until game four. So let's talk about game four. That was the one that everyone's going to remember right now. I mean, an 8-1 drubbing at any point in a hockey season is ESPN first half hour worthy, even though they don't show hockey highlights in the first half hour on SportsCenter. But doing it in a Stanley Cup playoff game when you've been beaten three times is pretty crazy.
Yeah, I mean, so that, talk about a game, right? You got Florida goes on the power play, 3 minutes into the game. They have two wide open nets. They hit the post on both. And Edmonton comes down shorthanded and buries one. And, you know, talk about puck luck swinging the other way. Florida could have easily taken the crowd out of that game right away with burying one on the power play. I think the air would have been sucked right out of that building. But instead, you know, the hockey gods were there for Edmonton. And, you know, kudos to them for crashing the net, going to the dirty areas, right? Like that's the type of goals that you need to have against Bobrovsky. It's tough to beat him one-on-one, but, you know, make him move side to side and crash the net, get in front of him, do whatever it takes.
In that game four with Edmonton getting three in the first period, right? And this is where we talked a lot about depth scoring, and we were asking for more depth from Edmonton previously, you know, coming out that we know the top lines are being washed out. Draisaitl, McDavid, Hyman, you know, I know Mr. Assist is doing his thing, but we need some goals out of that group, and we're not getting anything. Game four starts, we get depth scoring, and then the depth scoring leads to the top line scoring.
Yeah, I think that, you know, in our text string during the game, like Connor Brown was all over the ice in that game. And he was the one that, came down shorthanded, made the nice move on the 2-on-1 around Bobrovsky and threw it back out front. You know, that we were saying earlier that Florida comes out and hits two posts on the power play. If those go in, you know, maybe the momentum shifts a little bit, but yeah, I totally agree. I mean, the puck luck swings in the Oilers' favor in game four, you know, wasn't due to lack of effort in game one and game three. I think game two was probably the most lackluster that we've seen the Oilers, but they've been in three of the four games. It just, you know, Bobrovsky was the difference in game one.
Yeah, and to your point, Janmark, Henrik, and Holloway opened the scoring for Edmonton, and that just, it really seemed to get them going, because then the next group was McDavid, Nurse, Nugent-Hopkins, and Holloway again. So top line shows up after the opening line starts. And it looked like, and Kevin, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this too, it looked like there was almost more time and space in that game. Like, we've seen McDavid take the puck in with speed, usually curl at the half wall, and then not have anybody to give the puck to, or immediately be dumped on by two Panthers right away. It seemed like there was more time and space for the Oilers to move the puck around. Was that a change, again, in what Edmonton was doing, Kevin? Or do you think that Florida maybe didn't have their foot on the accelerator as much as they had in game three?
I thought the Panthers looked a little bit flatter than what they have been throughout the playoffs. Like, you know, one of the things that they've done from a defensive standpoint is they are consistently moving their feet and covering for one another and taking away the high percentage areas. And, you know, in some of those goals, there were breakdowns as far as the D not making, not moving their feet. I know the one goal, the first goal that Warren Fogle had scored in game three specifically, you know, Bennett was caught with he takes a shot, it goes wide, he puts his head down instead of, you know, going to his assignment. Those are things I think the Panthers will probably correct in this next game, because they definitely did not look as ferocious defensively. And you give a team like the Oilers with the skill that they have a split second of time and space, and they're going to make you pay for it. So, I think it shifts back to Sunrise for game five. They'll have the home energy in their favor. If they were a little bit tired in game four, they can use that energy to their advantage and see what happens, But if they do what they did in the last game, they know now they can get to Bob. I'm more interested to see how Bob responds in this next game, because we've seen some spots throughout the playoffs that his save percentage has not been that great. So we know that he can be beatable, but if he puts on the Superman's cape, which he's done in the past, it could be over in five.
I agree with you, Kevin. And I think what some of these numbers, right? This game has been, the series has been 5-on-5. It's been 4-on-4, which I think 4-on-4 hockey with Edmonton and the firepower they put over the boards is kind of exciting to watch. I actually enjoy the 4-on-4 time. Usually it doesn't offer you a whole lot when you watch a lot of games, but when you have a team with speed like Edmonton does and you play 4-on-4, it's fun. I mean, Barkov's going one way, McDavid's going the other way. It is just speed on top of speed on both sides. But where we stand currently, after Edmonton got that power play goal in game four, their first of the series, late to the party again for the second series in a row, they're still just under 30% on the power play, second in all the league for playoffs. Florida's in the middle of the pack, barely over 20%. But the PK, you're talking about the first and second place PK teams, right? So I don't think either team, usually it's, if this team gets on the power play, that's the advantage. You've got the number one penalty kill at 93.5 and the number two penalty kill at 89.5. I don't think power play goals are going to decide this series.
No, in fact, I think there's been more opportunities shorthanded with both teams at some point where, both teams' penalty kill is so good and tight that it's created some offensive, even though they're shorthanded.
Yeah, and you mentioned Bob a second ago, and how is his play going to change, or is it potentially going to change as the series goes on? He's at a 921 in the Stanley Cup Finals. That's a darn good save percentage. 920 is elite level goaltending, right? 100%. He's 909 overall in the playoffs. We talked about he was sub 900 for the Florida, the Tampa series, the Battle of the Sunshine State. And then you look at Stuart Skinner. If I were to tell you that Stuart Skinner is playing 919 hockey in the Stanley Cup Finals, you'd probably call me crazy. I had to reread the stat three times to make sure. We've said it before, Stuart Skinner is not the problem, but up until period three and then game four, he wasn't the answer for you. So let me throw this number at you and then let you respond. 826 prior to game four, that was the whole, can I get a save out of you mentality. 970 in game four, but his last four periods, so the dominating period three and then periods one, two, and three in game four, he's at a 973, just like he did in Dallas, turned it around and became the story. Do you think he can continue that along?
Well, I mean, in game four, he makes the save of the series in my mind. The crossover pass from the slot to Carter Verhaeghe, and he makes the diving save across. That could have made it 2-2. Instead, he makes the save. We know what that does to energize a team. He's in it. Can he do it? Can he do it for three more games? I don't know. You got to look at the body of work as one game at a time. But, if you look at what he's done so far in the playoffs, I mean, this is about the time when he starts to come out. So, I'm interested to see how he is in game five. Obviously, they need that big save. They need the big saves from him. They can't make it easy. If he's got a gaffe like he did in game three, the Panthers are a good enough team where they're going to capitalize on that. If they can eliminate those mistakes and take care of business, then yeah, I mean, I'm looking at it one game at a time. I'd love to see it go the distance just because I'm not ready for hockey to be done for the summer yet. But, Edmonton's outscoring them, 10-1 in the last four periods? I believe that's the stat, right?
That is the stat. Right. They found something. And what they found is a really soft Bobrovsky. He got pulled in the second period of game four, posting a .688 save percentage. Again, not necessarily blaming him for all the goals, right? But at the same time, he's been the reason Florida has gotten to where they've gotten to for the most part. Outdueled Jeremy Swayman, you know, all the stuff we know about from the previous games. He went .914 in game three in the win, but .667 in that third period, right? So his last four periods, we just said that Skinner's last four periods, he's at .973. Bobrovsky's at .641. .641 for the Vezina Trophy finalist, Conn Smythe favorite, .641. If he doesn't get that figured out, where do they go?
Fantastic question. You know, I think if Edmonton comes out and pops a couple early, I think that doubt creeps into his mind. You know, that's going to open up the Panthers to take chances. And, you know, what happens when you take chances is there's more time and space the other way. So, you know, keep in mind, he did make the save of the game in game three, right, to keep it a one goal game. But since then, he's looked just average, or as you would probably say, below average, according to the numbers. Conn Smythe, being a defensive and defensive minded, I still think Barkov is the Conn Smythe winner. I think he's the leader in the clubhouse, specifically after the last game. But we'll see, man. We'll see.
Well, and I think the pressure, well, I don't think, I know, the pressure is all on Florida. It's always on the team to win their fourth game. That's where all the pressure is. They now go home, which a lot of people think, and you being one of them, that's not in their favor or any home team's favor to go home and win. Yes, it happens. We all know that. But they play tighter at home. The crowd gets restless. Like you said, Edmonton comes out and scores two in the first. That crowd is going to be all sorts of restless. Uh-oh, here we go. Not that, you know, they don't have the... When Tom Brady went to Tampa, there was a conversation that, you know, Tom Brady's just doing it for his own stats. That's a loser franchise. They're never going to win anything, right? All the history of what Tampa Bay Buccaneers used to be. I say that because Florida, they haven't won anything. They're a relatively young team in the grand scheme of the NHL. They've had some chances. It's never gone well. So that mindset of like, oh, we're just the Florida Panthers. We can't win the cup, right? We're not that next level team that can do it. That will start to creep into the fans, not the players, but the fandom. And then the players will start hearing it and they won't be playing as loose or as free. And I'm a firm believer that the more you can just go out there and play the sport of hockey and play the game you love to play, you're a better hockey player and a better hockey team when you can get to that mindset.
Yeah. When you don't think, just play, right? That's the motto. And, you know, again, if I'm the Panthers, they've come back from 3-1 deficits before. I know it was 3-0, but now it's 3-1. And, you know, you just have to believe, and it's shift by shift, period by period. And, you know, if you are the Panthers, you're just trying to take away as much time and space with that high-octane offense that we've seen Edmonton have in the last four periods at least. You know, get back to doing what Florida has done best, and that's make it extremely tough for them to come through the neutral zone, to, you know, win the board battles, win the time, you know, the time in the end. You don't have to just throw pucks on net to throw pucks on net. You know, grind it out. You got the last change too, so use it to your favor.
But before we get to the game five, kind of look ahead, which we've done kind of on and off throughout the show, talking about, you know, almost which team is more primed, right? We just spoke about Florida being the home team, helpful. You know, it's helpful to be at home, might not be helpful if things don't go your way. You get two goals early, you're going to be happy you're at home because the crowd's going to be behind you. You're going to have all the noise. Edmonton's going to be scrambling. It's a done deal. What I'm wondering, though, is if Edmonton's at it again, let's say, right? They were down. It was only 2-1, not 3-1 against Dallas in the Western Conference final, but they were down. They won game one, which some people say they should have done. You being one of them, they should have, could have won game one in this series, didn't capitalize and lost that game. But they won the first game in Dallas. Why is that important? Well, they lost the next two and they're down 2-1. Stuart Skinner was talking about, they were talking about benching the guy, right? I mean, Knobloch had to come out and actually say that he's our guy. Like, we're not putting the backup in. We're not putting Pickard in. He's our guy. They rattled off three in a row. Not high offensive numbers until game six. I think they won 5-3. So that was their kind of first kind of show up. We covered that again earlier in the series about their offensive struggles. But the difference in that series, which is why I'm bringing this up, is because Stuart Skinner started to play better hockey and the defense started to play better hockey. And then the team structure changes. They're playing looser and freer in front of Stuart Skinner. On and on and on it goes. A lot of parallels with what's potentially happening here. Now, it's only one game. They go out and lose game five and they lose 4-1 because they can't put the puck in the net and Stuart Skinner bobbles two and whatever. Then I just wasted 3 minutes of everyone's time. But if Edmonton can come out and win game five and we see a similar pattern of what we've seen the last four periods or so, Edmonton, it's documented. Lose a bunch. They started the season bad. Change your coach. Go on a run. Lose three games in a row. Win 16 in a row. One shy of the NHL record late in the season. They've done well with their backs against the wall. Do you think any of that matters going in their locker room going into game five?
Hey, to know that you've done it and to you know, look back at similar times throughout the season and the playoffs where, you know, you've been down in the series and you've, you know, scratched and clawed your way back, that is a huge momentum for the Oilers. You know, it's one thing if you've never done it, but they've proven it. They've proven it more than once. You know, their coach has a phenomenal, good head on his shoulders. He doesn't get too high, doesn't get too low. Seems to believe in the lineup that he has, and rightfully so. It's gotten them to where they're at now. Yeah, and you know, as a goalie, that when confidence is going one way, the puck looks like a beach ball. You know, if it starts going the other way, you know, you're trying to stop a golf ball. And you know, it's funny how quickly those things can shift. Like, you look at Edmonton's goals. You know, they haven't been, you know, air quote, the prettiest, but they've been truly, you know, dirty playoff goals. One off of the Florida Panthers' elbow, you know, obviously the nice tip from Henrique. You know, you have Fogle going around to that first goal where, you know, he throws it back out front and you've got someone crashing the net. That's what we've said in previous episodes, right? Like, that's what wins playoff hockey. And, you know, Tarasenko's goal was a filthy tip as well. Again, going to the front of the net, and if a goalie's going to see the shot, they're going to save it. So, you know, you got to take away their eyes. You got to make that thing change direction. You got to make it tough on them. So,
and with Florida, just like anybody else, you need your horses to show up when it matters. I know Barkov probably dealing with a little bit of an injury in some capacity. Most players are at this time of the year. But Verhaeghe, I mean, he was our pre-series selection for MVP. I may have been in the Hard Rock Bets, Hard Rock Live app prior to the series and picked Verhaeghe's name out of the list just because I saw what he did early on, and he was leading that team. And he gets the first goal of the series, and I'm thinking, oh, I'm looking good now. Here I am. He's going to light it up. They're going to win in five, and he's going to be the guy. Yes, stolen from him in game four. But he's just been kind of nice. And Tkachuk, he's starting to get the antics game going. His name was mentioned a few times because of the antics side of the house. Some shots on goal again, but where's 19, right? Where's their captain? What is he going to bring to the table? So I think Florida is in the space of where we were talking about Edmonton after game two. Where are their players going to step up? When are they going to show up? And when are they going to make a difference? If they do, it's over in five. If they're still milk carton missing, then we're going to be back. It's going to be another 2,500 mile flight on Delta for the Panthers to go up there and try to win it in Edmonton.
Yep. No, for sure. I mean, look, the depth has not let Florida down all season and all playoffs. And I fully expect, you know, they're going to bring it. You know, let's just talk about the fact, like, the pace of the games with these two teams, with as much hockey as they've played, it just seems to get faster. And it's crazy to think of that. This is their fourth round. You know, they've been at it for just shy of 2 months, and they're still putting out the effort and the entertainment to our favor. And I four games now, it is going to start to get greasy. You know, the hatred is there. You know, everyone knows, you know, antics on both teams. There's been some questionable hits. I know there was another knee on knee that Nurse got away with in game four. I thought that one looked worse than the Fogle hit in game three. But, thankfully everyone's still healthy and playing. And, you know, that brings an exciting game five, where hopefully it's full of hits and full of opportunities. And, you know, as a hockey fan, I'm hoping Edmonton comes out on top, because, like I said, I'm not ready to watch baseball full time.
Amen. Also, the hit. Thank you for bringing that up. We talked a little bit about the Fogle hit. That was a five in a game. That play, to me, looking at it, was the more accidental one. I understand the legs outstretched, all that. Some of that's still just human reaction to extend a leg. Not that you're trying to do it on purpose. It just happens. This play, Nurse comes from distance. He sees him. He lines him up. He keeps the leg extended. He hardens the knee. Like, everything said, he did that literally on purpose. And to listen to PK Subban, and you and I talked off the record about this, I'm going to put this on the record, not that PK Subban's going to listen to this, but if he does, I want him to hear it, is that he talked on the broadcast that was the one that was less dangerous because, and I don't remember the player that got hit from Florida, but he was able to see it coming and try to get out of the way. Well, he didn't get out of the way. He couldn't get out of the way. Nurse extended his leg and took him out. And to listen to PK Subban in the intermission talk about that good physical play is what turned the tide for Edmonton, and they need more of that, just continually goes to show you the type of player PK Subban was. And yes, some of this is because he wore the red and the rouge and blue up there in Montreal, and I'm a black and gold fan, but that is one of the most asinine things to say, is that was a good physical hit. And the Edmonton needs to continue that style of play. The style of physical play is one thing. That hit's suspendable. That's just a really unfortunate thing to come out of his mouth.
Yeah, I totally agree. I thought the Fogle hit was more bang bang reactionary. Nurse looked like he had time to move out of the way, and instead he did extend. And I thought for sure, based off of the call from game three, that they were going to go on a 5 minute, and then you're losing, you know, one of your top D for the rest of the game. Is that the league saying that, you know, we don't want one of our top players, going out for the remainder of a game in a clinching potential cup winning game? I don't know, but I'm with you. When I saw it right away, I thought that's way worse than what the Fogle hit was. In fact, I thought Fogle looked like he got the worst of it. When his hit took place, I thought he was the one that was going to be, you know, carted off. But, PK, right? When he was on the Habs, he was a broom killer. I mean, he had a bomb from the top, and, you know, I love his outgoing personality. I know they always say hockey players are a little bit more reserved. It is good to hear that, some of his points, but I totally with you on that one. I thought he was wrong on that one.
He also has a standing offer anytime to join the Canadian Olympic diving team if he wants to. But that's enough. It's enough on the PK Subban side. No, I agree. And Panger made a comment that it's hard for the players when that call gets a 2 minute. Now they called it a five so that they could review it. That's the protocol in the NHL. They reviewed it and dropped it down to a two. Panger then makes the comment that it's unfortunate, or it's hard for the players at that point, because now they don't know the line. Like, they drew it in the sand when the Fogle hit happened. This hit looked identical or worse, and that's just a 2 minute. So now we're back to goalie interference again. What is and what isn't goalie interference? I don't know. We'll make it up as we go along. Another something that the league has to figure out.
Yeah, and let's hope that, you know, goalie interference does not, you know, make a huge point of finishing this season and this, you know, this Stanley Cup run, because we've saw enough of it definitely in the first couple rounds with in different games. Yeah, what is goalie interference? What is a 5-minute kneeing major? You know, you look at both of those, I'd be scratching my head too as to, you know, what's what. You know, is it flip a coin depending on how the stripes feel that day or what? I don't know.
I agree, my friend. I agree. So let's, as we wrap up the show, let's get into prediction time. So game five, what is your thoughts?
Game five, I think if the Oilers come out with the same energy that they did in game four, they jump out to a quick lead. I think this one could go in the Oilers' favor. My prediction is a 4-1 Oilers win with an empty netter.
4-1 with an empty netter. I don't know. It's funny. I don't know which way I want to go. I want Edmonton to win because I want the series to go on. I think they absolutely can win. I think it's going to depend how they start, how they come out. Can I give you a prediction? If Edmonton scores first, then I think they win the game. If Florida scores first, I think they win the game. Can I give you that prediction?
That's a fair one. You know, that's definitely a fair one. And the one thing that I think both teams have proven too is, you know, whoever does score first, they've got the green light. You know, they tend to close it out. More so in the Panthers' favor than the Oilers. But, you know, if Skinner can stay hot and, you know, the big boys in the Oilers' jerseys build off of that, you know, beat down from game four, watch out, you know. And if they get power plays and the confidence is there and that starts clicking, should be fun.
Well, for the first time really in this year's playoffs, the reason Edmonton has a chance is because there's questions on Bobrovsky and Florida's crease. And there hasn't been those questions all series and all playoffs. And I think if it was just a regular 3-1 win yesterday or in game four, then we're not talking about Bobrovsky potentially being fragile at this point and being beaten. But because it was what he let in six before he was pulled, I believe, or was it the five? It was five. Yeah. He got pulled after goal five. So he comes out after five. It didn't look good. It, you know, again, not his fault. He didn't let in any dribblers or anything like that, but still it just wasn't Bobrovsky-esque. Right. So yeah. I think that's where the questions come in, which is why I think Edmonton's getting a lot of play right now and extending the series. Plus I also think you look at their top end talent, they can do it. They have the people to score goals. McDavid's getting hot. Draisaitl is getting hot. You poke the bear, and I'm not saying Florida did anything to do that, but you awaken the sleeping giant, I guess is the better phrase to use. Watch out what they can do. And they may come out gangbusters. Again, backs against the desperate team always plays harder than the team that's got the cushion, right? And we watched it with the Bruins and the Flyers. You think you have that cushion. You don't necessarily push and push until what, game seven or period three of game six. And then at that point, now you're reeling and they're just all over you because they have all the confidence in the world and you're questioning every decision you make. And I think that's really in play here in game five.
Yeah. I think anytime you have a chance to close it out, you want to step on, you know, the throat of your opponent. And, you know, every opportunity that you let up, it just gives that much more momentum to the team that's trying to catch you. So, you know, again, we said it more than once today. I'm hoping to see a game six, but, you know, let's hope. Hopefully it's a good game five. And, you know, we've got something to talk about again in a couple days.
That's right. We'll take it one game at a time, just like the professionals are. And as always, I'd like to thank Kevin Trussler for giving us his knowledge, thoughts, and just general buffoonery in the nest.
That is correct. I'll go with the latter.
Kevin, enjoy game five. Hopefully there's a game six, and hopefully we're talking game seven next time we get together here in the nest. Enjoy the rest of your week, my friend.
You too. Thanks, Jeff.
Later.
See you.